close.
It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And let's do that. Let's introduce our guest, Cecil Harvell, on the phone with us from Harvell and Collins. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. How is everybody?
We're a little warm and sticky over here in Moorhead City, but, you know, hey, that's summertime.
I think that time of year now has arrived, and I don't know. I'm one of these. I'm glad to see it, actually.
Yeah, kind of.
I'd rather be warm and
than freezing.
A little bit uncomfortable than cold.
Yeah, I hear you. But, you know, life goes on, whether it's hot or cold, Cecil. Life goes on, and your legal matters continue onward as well. What are we going to talk about today, Cecil?
We're going to talk about the subject of, and it often is referred to in estate practice or planning practice as, quote, the will substitute. What are the substitutes for a last will and testament? It's kind of an interesting topic, an interesting twist of words. And so let's talk about will substitutes today.
Okay.
What are they?
Mm-hmm.
How do they operate? Right out of the gate, Mike, I would like to say that there are many of them, and they are very dangerous if we don't take the time to understand will substitutes. Will substitutes, Mike, in a nutshell, are things like joint accounts at banks with right of survivorship, designation of beneficiaries on IRAs or on annuities, or on life insurance policies, stock accounts that some broker has advised that they be payable on death or time on death, so that the stock account at a various stock advisor's office pays outside the scope of the last will and testament is, in fact, a will substitute and passes according to the payable on death designations. These kinds of will substitutes, Mike, have become so prevalent, talked about by the bankers, the stockbrokers, our advisors that are out there, that we estate planning lawyers are very, very busy, if you will, undoing these will substitutes or advising against them or attempting to coordinate the will substitute with the terms of the last will and testament. After all, Mike, if your last will and testament says to divide the stock account by payable on death to the child that is helping you at the end of life, then it's not going to divide three ways to all the children. It's going to only pass to the one child that got added to the account.
Mm-hmm.
And we are seeing more and more of this across the board, you know, bank accounts, annuity designations, life insurance, and even stock account designations. So when we now plan work with clients to prepare their estate planning documents, one of the things that we now are doing that is critically important is having the client confirm to us the non-existence, if you will, of either these will substitutes, that they have not
mm-hmm.
made their stock account payable on death, or that they have not made their bank account joint with survivorship to one of the three children, and that if for some reason they have done such a will substitute, then it will coordinate with their intention as well as with their estate planning document.
I can see where it would get sticky real quick. I'm curious, just as you outlined that, and I had no idea that this exists, and I think I have this in my life with my wife. does one supersede the other? In other words, is the will the will
does not.
It does not
supersede. That's why these other these other techniques, if you will, or these other avenues or options are in fact called will substitutes, because they substitute for the will. These are the kind of things that get said that are misnomers. Things get said like, well, I wanted to have my daughter on my bank account because I want her to have access to it. And so therefore, the daughter with the mother or the mother with the daughter go to the bank and register all of her accounts, the money market including, which just happens to have a couple of $100,000 in it, all registered to the daughter. And yet the last will and testament of the mother is that the assets in my estate are to be divided equally amongst, say, my three children. So that is one of the things that gets said, that, well, I wanted my daughter to have access to the bank. Well, Mike, you know, the daughter already has access to the bank account through the power of attorney. She doesn't need to be a joint owner on the bank account or registered with survivorship on the bank account. Those are wholly different results. She will have access to the money of the mother through her well-drafted and recorded power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
She does not need to be registered on the account. As to our stockbroker friends, their conversation with their clients is, well, Mrs. Jones, you know that you want your stock account here at our office, $500,000 or more, to, quote, avoid probate. You don't want it to go through probate because that's time-consuming and costly. Well, it isn't time-consuming. It isn't time-consuming at all. It can all be done within 2, 3, 4 weeks of someone dying. And it also is not costly in any way, shape, or form. There isn't any real added cost, if you will, of any significance. I mean, there's cost in everything that we do. I mean, we fill up our tank of gas and there's some costs involved. So there are maybe some transfer fees or things of that nature. But when you take the account out of the auspices of the clerk of court, then you have no assurances that the account would be divided as you have directed it to be divided. And it certainly would not be divided amongst all three children if there's been a POD designation to one child or to some other combination. I hope I'm being clear, Mike. Sometimes when you just talk like this, you wonder if your sentences are clear to those that are listening. I certainly hope they are.
No, I think you're coming through. I think you're coming through clear. And I think you're unpacking a topic and a situation that many of us are in, but probably not aware of the ramifications at the end of the line. What this all means. But continue, because I think you are making sense, Cecil. Some questions.
Other place that this really becomes complex is in the contingency language of our last will and testament. For instance, we say that things are to be divided amongst the three children, but that it goes in a per serpes distribution to the children of the children if for some reason someone is not living, if we've lost a child.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's suppose that one of our children does not have children, okay? Then the bottom line there is that the will, of course, would direct, you know, what happens under those circumstances, whereas the POD designation is not going to address most of the time these contingencies. It's just not going to be... there's not going to be that kind of detail For instance, in a last will and testament, it would be likely that it would say to my three children per stirpes, but that should any one of my three children not have children, then it's going to be divided by the other two. So that's the kind of detail that you find in a last will and testament, but you do not find it in a will substitute.
So listeners out there may think they're in the boat that you just described here, Cecil. And suppose, just for example, that the joint accounts, an elderly mother and her daughter, the daughter signs on as a joint to the account. She already had the power of attorney. How do you untangle this? Is it possible once someone has established a joint account with a mother and a daughter to bring it back under the power of the full power of the will? Is it possible to untangle this and bring it back under the will?
It's very difficult, Mike. It's very, very difficult. And the same with the POD designations at the stock brokerage companies.
Mm-hmm.
Because the account legally is passing according to the POD or the joint registration. And for the one child, then, out of some sort of moral duty or wish or desire to divide that account back to their other siblings, the transfer of their amounts now is a gift because they have no obligation to do that.
Right.
Now, that, of course, is if they will do it. And it's interesting in our office to see human nature takes place, and sometimes, just recently, for instance, we had a brother that insisted from the beginning that he would reallocate the joint account, the POD account, with his sister, that his mother only put him on it so that he could have access again.
Yeah.
That was the excuse or reason that was given. And then yet after 6 months or 9 months, he kind of changed his mind, because he didn't like the way his sister had treated him with regard to, you know, the pots and pans or the teacups that were in the kitchen. So the bottom line is that people changed their mind. The legal title has already vested according to the POD designation or according to the joint with survivorship designation. So it really does open up Pandora's box for litigation, for delay, for irrevocable conflict in the family that then exists for, you know, decades and passes on even to subsequent generations, all because of the fact that things did not get divided equally.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have to do now, since these POD designations are so very popular amongst the stockbrokers, what we have to do is we have to check behind with our clients when we do estate planning documentation and first of all make sure that the PODs are consistent. And then if not, then have contingency language that will cover the issues that I talked about earlier. Another disadvantage of the POD designation is that we have situations where mom dies, she still owes some taxes on her tax return for the coming year. The funeral, of course, has to be paid. There are some expenses that have occurred at the home that did not get all paid for. Maybe there are some last medical bill expenses, whatever the case might be. And now we find out that the bank account is POD to the son, joint with the son, and the stock account is joint with the son, or POD, and the IRA has the beneficiaries. And so there is now no money whatsoever in the estate account, in the estate, to handle these last bills and expenses. And so the executor is in our office with a short list, but a significant list of bills to pay, $10,000, $15,000, $17,000, $20,000, $22,000, you know, and no funds whatsoever to pay them because everything, including the stock account, was designated POD and passed immediately out to the children.
Oof.
And so now the executor is in the position to call up his other brother and his sister and say, by the way, I know Mom put the account POD with the stockbroker, but the bottom line is that I need you to each send me $5,000 or $10,000 of that money so that I now can pay the expenses. Well, that's what they're advised to do, and that's what they do do. And then 2 weeks later, they stop by at our office, upset about the fact that the one brother or the one sister is not going to agree to send the $10,000. And what do I now, Mr. Harvell, do about it?
Let's hold that thought. I want to hear what you what the answer is to that. We'll take our break here. This is intriguing. If you want to learn more and call Harvell and Collins today, do so. 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We're talking with Cecil Harvell. Interesting topic, the will substitute. I had no idea, but I'm learning as Cecil continues to unpack this very complex topic and making it very understandable. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back after this. Back to Let's Talk Legal. We're talking with Cecil Harvell from Harvell and Collins. We're talking about the will substitute. And I held us purposely at this point because it's getting interesting here. So Mom dies and she has a payment on death to her one son who's taking care of her. But there's other siblings out there and there's funeral right. expenses, there's tax bills, and there's other bills. And they ask for the money that they had received already because it's been dispersed to send back to the...
No, this one is... The facts here that come up at the table every single day are a little more different than that. The POD is to the three children, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's to the three children. But now there's no money in the estate to pay the expenses.
Right.
And so, therefore, the executor, who's one of those children,
mm-hmm.
has to call his siblings, his two brother and sister,
yeah.
and say, by the way, you know you got your third of the POD account from the stockbroker. I need you to send me 10,000 of that
mm-hmm.
so that I'm going to put in 10,000 and Mary's going to put in 10,000 and John, I need you to put in 10,000 so that we can now pay Mom's bills,
yeah.
the repair on the house, the last bill to the IRS that she still owed. You know, the funeral bill, which, you know, funerals, if there's a burial, you know, can be $12,000-$14,000.
Sure.
So I need you to send me back now 10,000 of what you got, on the POD designation so that I can really handle Mother's estate. This is not every now and then. This has become really, I would say, 80 or 90% of the estates that we handle. Because so many of the brokers are advising the POD. And the reason they advise it again is to avoid probate.
Mm.
And my response to that is that probate in North Carolina is a friendly process. It's not a terribly expensive process, but it gives this accountability. This clairvoyance, this openness,
the transparency.
To what is happening in with the assets of our mother and father. Everything is on the up and up. Everything is out there to be looked at and to be analyzed and to be divided equally. And of course, when things are not passing through the probate estate because of the fact that assets have been titled differently, then of course what that does is put us in a position where we may not have the monies in the estate to handle things.
Yeah, and the bills you mentioned, particularly the tax bills, not going away. And now it comes to a confrontation between the one sib who's reneging on giving the money back to pay the bills that were generated by their mother at the time before her death. So now what happens?
What happens is that we then have to be, we start, by, you know, writing a letter, if you will, you know, asking the one sibling to assist in his part. And if they don't respond after that, then of course the executor then gets advice that he's got to seek a lawyer different than our law firm to legally sue his brother, to set these circumstances before the court.
What would you hope the listeners take away from this conversation today?
I would not advise that all of the assets of your mother be put in a POD posture. Okay. You might want to put a particular account. Maybe the IRA is, of course, POD with beneficiaries, but leave the after-tax account as it is. Don't put all of the assets of your parents in a posture whereby they pass outside the scope of the probate estate or the will.
I got you. Okay. I think that's good advice there. Let's stop on that point. We'll take our final break here. We'll come back. We'll have a few moments to close this conversation with Cecil Harvell from Harvell & Collins. You can call him today at 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back after this quick timeout. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell from Harvell & Collins. Cecil, we have about 2 minutes remaining.
So I think, Mike, that we conclude by saying that POD designations and joint registrations of accounts at banks need to be analyzed very carefully.
Yeah.
They're not forms that just need to be blanketly advised to clients, and here, sign here. This will avoid probate. This will cause things to pass once something happens to you, Mrs. Jones. This will make things go easier for your family. We need to look behind those things. There's more devil is in the details. There's more conversation to be had. Again, if it is something on, in moderation, the old saying, you know, everything in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go again.
Yeah.
There's no problem with an IRA being named beneficiary. An annuity maybe has beneficiaries, the three children. But you can't name every single asset that you have in a will substitute form and leave the executor in a position where there are no assets whatsoever.
Yeah.
And also your designations, we have to look at the contingencies. I cannot emphasize this enough. When you name just your children, well, that's assuming that we still have the three children.
Right.
What if something happens to one of the children?
Life happens. Cecil, thank you very much for bringing this topic to the forefront. Very important topic. Thank you.